students, and students have been great. Reminder to the students, I need you to keep your camera on. And a heads up, I'm going to have you ask questions of Representative Arndt after she goes through her initial spiel. So be thinking about what you'd like to ask her, and we'll open it up to everyone then for questions. I think you'll find this very, very interesting. This course is all based on Western water law policies, institutions. And today, for the first time in about 3 years, is the first time that we've had somebody from the Colorado legislature, the General Assembly, come and talk to the class. And I am so pleased to introduce you all to Jenny Arndt. She is a representative for the Fort Collins district, 53, 58, I can't remember. And she's a very interesting person, and I've asked her to go ahead and introduce herself and give you a bit of her background. I think it's important that people understand kind of where you've come from and what led you to this point where you've become a leader, and especially a leader in water issues in our state. And I think Jenny can give you a real good perspective with respect to that. With that, a reminder that all these lectures are recorded, and you can find them on the website at the Water Center. And they also are on Canvas for the students who are here. I did assign on Canvas some reading, and it was basically just how laws are made in the legislature. So I don't know that we're going to really talk about that today, but I wanted to give you a sense of some of the mechanics you have to go through to get a law through. So with that, Jenny, I am so pleased to have you here and so thankful to have you join us. And I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, thanks. And hi, thank you for having me, everyone. I really appreciate it. First of all, I think if you don't know, you're very, very lucky to have Jennifer Gimbel as your professor. And it's a topic that's absolutely fascinating. And I was telling her before we got on with y'all that down in Denver anyway, she has a very excellent reputation in terms of the water people. So it's a pleasure when she invited me. Of course, I said yes. I think you should take every single minute of this class that you can get and keep your notes. So with that, I usually start talking a little bit, and Jennifer kind of said that it would be maybe apropos if I talked a little bit about how my background, and then kind of one of the questions I get all the time is how, you know, what'd you do wrong to become a state rep in your life? Or, you know, how do things go south like that? So basically, how did you come to run, right? And then what's relevant to this class in addition to that is sort of the role that state policy plays in Western water. And then maybe some that'll be a short talk. And then what I'm really interested in is what you're interested in. And so we can bear in mind that I think of water as like this huge elephant, and we have experts like Jennifer and others that we'll mention along the way. And then the part of water that I know is the politics of water, passing a water bill, bringing people together and trying to understand how a policy would affect different parts of the state and what we can think collectively that might be a good idea for our state. So I am Jenny James Arndt. I live right here on Mulberry Street. You probably could drive by my house and look at my rather humble fireplace. And I have a few yard signs out this time of year, so you'll know where I live. I live right across the city park on the Little Lake. So y'all welcome to stop by or wave or anything like that. But I say that because I think it's important for people to know and to make it very tangible and real what a politician does and how we work. So we are just in the neighborhood. I grew up, if I could throw, I could hit my childhood home. I grew up on Crestmore Place. I went to Moore and Blevins and Pooter High. And then I left Fort Collins for about 24 or 5 years and came back. So in the meantime, I went to Colorado College for undergraduate, and then I went to spend a couple years in Washington and 2 years getting a graduate degree in Boulder in geography. And then I went in the Peace Corps in Morocco. I was married then, and my husband was also Peace Corps in Morocco. And then we went to Purdue University, where I got a teaching master's in special ed, taught special ed. And then I got a PhD eventually from Purdue University in language and literacy. We moved back overseas to Denmark and then back to Purdue and then back to Mozambique from 2002 to 2008. At that point, I had been teaching the American school and doing some other, you know, we had three children as well. But every summer I always come home because my mom lives on Mountain Avenue and I'd always come home to visit my mom. So I stayed in touch with a lot of people that I knew from when I was growing up. I didn't know then that my, one of my high school teachers was Bob. I knew he was Bob Bacon, but I didn't really put it together. He'd been on school board, then was a state rep, and then was our state senator. And I had always been involved growing up in different things, community service wise. And then I'd been on two school boards when I lived away. And when I moved home, they said, you know, we really want you to run for office. And so I told him to jump in the lake because I had a really good job and have three kids and my husband worked for the United Nations and he was gone about half the year. I said, no. They said, okay, we'll ask you in another year. In the meantime, I got involved just helping other people run and doing some other community service things like being on the board of disabilities with the city of Fort Collins and those sorts of things. And then one day when Bob Bacon and I were talking, it kind of dawned on me that running for office doesn't make you a politician. It's just another way to extend your community service. And once I got that through my thick head, then I thought, oh, well, maybe that would be a place that I could contribute to my community. That's my dog. there he goes. Sorry. So then I did. I decided to run. And Randy Fisher was my direct predecessor, and he was a water engineer. So we went on a long bike ride, and he said, you know, Jenny, when I'm done at the Capitol, there won't be a lot of people down there with water knowledge. And I'm a pretty good student. I like school, and I was 50 years old, and I thought, this is a good challenge. So I, as an educator, there's a lot of people interested in education, and I thought, you know, and as a special educator, I usually go to where kind of gravitate to things that, you know, where I'm needed. So I thought, well, if people need me in water, I'll start studying water. So I did. I just bought a bunch of law books. I started meeting people, water lawyers. I went on a lot of water field trips. I got my little car and I followed the water committee around all summer and slept in KOAs. And I, you know, I just sit there, fly on the wall and just learn and read and talk and try to just do a big self-study. And I went to water law conferences, just paid to go and sit there and go, oh, that's where I met Peter Nichols. I was like, oh, is that, you know, so you just kind of put myself through the ABCs. Then I got elected and then people started trusting me to, help them with some water bills, and then I got on the water committee. So that's kind of the cliff's note of how this kind of happened. And I think that's probably enough about me. Three kids, they're 27, 25, and 21. My husband's an ag economist. He's a director at the International Food and Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. And my mom lives on Mountain Avenue. So that's my personal background and how I came to do it. So I can talk about water policy and how we bring people together to get more than 50% of votes at the Capitol. The first 4 years I was there, the Republicans had, I'm a Democrat, but the Republicans had the Senate and the Democrats had the House. No bill passed that was not bipartisan. I've only run two bills in my whole 6 years down there without a Republican on them. And those, yeah, two. One of them was the national popular vote. I couldn't get a Republican on that one. But I think there was one land use water bill that the Republicans didn't want either. But other than that, every single bill, even when I could pass it without that, I feel like it makes every bill stronger when you get a bigger, wider collaboration. And a lot of times Senator Corum is the Republican on the West Slope. So I run most of my water bills with him because if someone of the other party from the other side of the state also thinks it's a good idea, chances are we can build a coalition to make sure that we get the policy right for Colorado. And that's more important to me than any sort of partisan one-upmanship, especially in terms of water, right? It's just too important, and it shouldn't, in my view, not political. It gets political, but people like to make it that way when it doesn't need to be. So I will tell you one thing about my degree in language and linguistics. It's a lot about word choice, and that degree, ironically, has helped me a lot at the Capitol, because I say, oh, I do speak Republican, so I can, a lot of times I take a bill that looks super contentious and could be possibly partisan, and honestly, if you maintain the meaning of it and you're not tricking anyone, but what you're doing is using words that make meaning for the recipient so that the policy becomes clear in a way that's understandable through a partisan lens. And that has been a very effective tool in communicating with people of different political persuasions to get bills passed. So that has been an advantage.
So Jenny, you've worked on a lot of water-centric bills. Give us an example of one of your most challenging ones, and then maybe another example of one you're most proud of.
Well, Randy Fisher started something called the, I can't remember what it was called at first. And I remember hearing it when I was following the water committee around. I was like, that's a great idea. And it was a market-based approach to water sharing. I can't remember what you used to call it. Anyway, so as a freshman, it died. And as a freshman, I was like, I'll do that. And everyone laughed at me. All the water people were like, go big or go home, Art. What are you doing? I was like, I don't really know, but I think it's a good idea. And it failed. And then I went to Water Congress that summer, and I started asking people in a very authentic way, why didn't you like that bill? What's wrong with that bill? And people kind of didn't trust me. People kind of labeled me as probably a very, they just were sort of wary. Finally, when they understood that I really, really wanted to know what was wrong with the bill, and I thought they were smart people, but just disagreed with me, they must be seeing something I wasn't seeing. And so Chris Treese from the River District came, and then like a guy named Greg Kernahan from Ducks Unlimited to come. And then once they said they'd come, then like about five more people came. And then I sat down with them and I said, I'm just so curious why you oppose this bill. And finally, one of them was brave enough to go, well, Representative, if you just, that doesn't work because of this. I go, oh, okay, I'm not wed to that. Let's change that. Well, what about this? Well, what about that? And then we just worked it and rewrote it and rethought it and listened harder. And I'll be darned, we renamed it. Oh, the Flex Bill is what it was originally called. Flexible Market Bill. We renamed it, I don't know, somebody else's idea, not mine, the Colorado Ag Water Protection Act. And then you just thought harder and went back to the drawing board and asked smart people who oppose you what the problem was. And they all agreed that there was something really in there that would be helpful to farmers, that they could realize value off their water rights without changing them or selling them, right? So now it was the first fundamentally new water right in Colorado in, I don't know, years. I think since the in-stream flow water right about 30 years ago. So now you can get a water right that's called the Colorado Ag Water Protection Act, right? I don't think anyone has done that yet because it takes a change case to get it, which is expensive. But when you're in the middle of a change case, you might change your water right from ag to the flexi, the one that's more flexible. So that was a good multi-year project. I learned a lot. And then I think the work on a water reuse was valuable in terms of expanding the where we can use water, reused water that is treated, but just up to the potability of 1987 drinking standards instead of modern standards. And we expanded that to toilet flushing, indoor crops, and hemp, but that was already kind of legal. But that one wasn't really my idea, but we did it anyway. And that's the purple pipe, in case you guys been studying that. So that expansion of use for wastewater is a good one. And then we were successful in tying together just a mini build of just a baby step of tying water and land use planning together. And that came from American Planners Association. I ran that bill 3 years, and finally this year it passed. And it's about guiding the counties in their land use planning that they need to consider water in their master plans. And all of what Bill says is consider. And it had failed twice before. I was like, we're taking baby steps, though. So, you know. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. I have to laugh because I think of a lot of baby steps that we've taken. And I worked with Randy Fisher a lot. And I'm glad you came to the forefront and worked on those water issues. But it's clear that if you're going to represent somebody, like in the General Assembly as an elected official, things don't come easy. They may not happen the first time. And you have to figure out how to get it to work. And you did a wonderful job of describing that with respect to the Flex Bill. And the renaming, I think, was very important with respect to that. So I congratulations on that. It's helpful. Let's see. Natalie, do you have a question for Representative Arndt?
Sure. I guess this is kind of a very general and kind of a broad question, but what is to you the most complicated part of being involved in water law?
Water law. not having a large background, I guess 7 years now I've been studying water, but I'm still a water baby. But that's not really my role, right? My role is to know the experts to go to consult with. I feel like I need to know enough about water to know if I think it's a good policy. And then I need to know enough of people that I trust and respect, which is most of the people in the water world, really. I mean, they're the smartest, nicest, they're engineers and practical, hardworking people to weigh in with information from different perspectives and different localities around the state. So I think maybe the hardest part for me is so there's a mutual ditch problem now, and I've been working with some water lawyers who know a lot about mutual ditches, and then I'll ask them about another part of water and they go, oh, we don't know, we specialize in mutual ditches, which is great because I need to know them, Dan Brown and those guys. But for me, I need to know a little bit about mutual ditches, and I need to know a little bit about indoor use and quality and quantity. So as we say, like, our knowledge is an inch deep and a mile wide, and then I get to work with experts who are just the opposite. So that's great, but sometimes it's really challenging, and you have to be able to say, I don't know.
And you have to know enough to convince your compatriots that it's a bill that they should support. How do you do that? Because they probably
don't want it right now. No, I think by being an honest broker, right? I killed two of my bills last year. I sat down in front of my own committee and I was like, I got to tell you what, this is a good idea, but we're not ready. This piece of policy is not ready. I mean, I could have gotten the votes in my committee. I could have got off the floor, get over the Senate and get it out. I wasn't comfortable. We were trying to tweak the abandonment statute. If you enter voluntarily into some sort of a conservation agreement with the state engineer, people are reluctant to do that because they're worried that if they don't use everything all the time, that that part of their water would be subject to abandonment. So we just couldn't. You know, is it 10 years? Is it 5 years? Is it this? You know, it just wasn't where I thought, and it was not an immediate thing. I think you earn people's trust when you sit down in front of your own committee and say, the way we say it, we PI, which means we postpone indefinitely a bill. So I think when people know that you're really thinking about the policy and you're making steps to, one, engage the Republicans or the opposing party, whatever, or the other party, who don't always oppose, by the way, I think you earn people's trust.
Have you ever had a bill that was strictly political, Democrat versus Republican, involving water issues? I can't think of one. I just didn't know if you had.
You know, some of my colleagues ran the rain barrel bill that was very partisan, which,
okay,
you know, but I knew that would be a big, huge partisan fight, and it was a nice little bill, but I didn't want to spend all that time. I mean, they got all the press, you know, I don't like to do the whole media thing. I mean, and that was fine. It's nice to have rain barrels. Two rain barrels a house is great. I might tweak that this year because it says residential, and the little Montessori school over here in our district wants to have one. And so we might switch it to like demonstration or educational or something like that, just to be inclusive of schools wanting to teach their students about water. So Jennifer, certainly I've had bills fail, but no.
I mean, politics are involved, but it's not the typical Democrat versus Republican politics I see in water. And I just was curious if you felt that too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always joke, I was like, I'd sit down with a bunch of people, you know, mix of people. I go, let's just get this straight. This is not DNR. This is Westlow versus Eastlow, right out of the gate.
And that is a difference in water.
It is.
Miles, question for Representative.
That's kind of gone down too, though, because I think there's a real, I used to ask them this, why do you oppose conservation bills? Why do you oppose water conservation bills if in the front range we're standing up saying we want to save water and you guys say no, and all we're going to do if we want water, we're just going to come suck more over. The more we save, the more your water's secure. Honestly, I know Chris Treese understood that, but I think it took a little while for them to go, oh yeah. So now all of a sudden those are not controversial anymore. I know I wasn't the only one saying it, but it just didn't make sense to me. I mean, wow. If we want to save water, why can't we? Please let us.
So one question I had that you kind of somewhat just answered, but do you really see any reoccurring themes when it comes to problems when you're trying to get support on water law?
There used to be a bias against conservation bills, I think. I mean, you know, for or against, you know, that's sort of, you know, the Democrats kind of liked the blue water conservation and the Republicans vote against it. I think that those lines are blurring. The thing that now is sort of a trigger is the word storage. You know, if you want to shape it up in raw political terms, which is never quite accurate, but Republicans like storage and Democrats don't want storage. Now, it gets more nuanced because, you know, I ran an aquifer bill to ask the state engineer to make the rules, to promulgate rules for the whole state for aquifer storage recovery. And that was 100-0, right? So, that means unanimous, right? So it's hard to just say Democrats are against storage. I think that it's the surface storage. It's the dams and the environmental concerns when you build a big dam, and the water loss through transpiration, those sorts of things. Kind of wanting to think a little bit more outside the box of, I kind of call it yestertech in a way, right? You know, our four parents were just really brilliant, right? And I always say, I just hope we can be half as smart as they were. But I also think that we need to turn our attention to the future, right? And how we're really going to distribute the scarce resource in a way that's the most efficient and the least environmentally damaging.
Yeah. Mattia, do you have a question for Representative Martin?
So I'm from Mississippi, and I work for the Army Corps of Engineers, actually. And one of our major problems is actually getting politicians to talk about water. I think that might be kind of a Southeastern problem, but do you ever feel like people are kind of like, it's water, why do we care about it?
Water's not very sexy, right? It's like, like politicians like to be, well, first they like to get reelected, which always stumps me. Like, whatever. The irony is I think if you worry about the 2 years you have in front of you, the next election comes easier. So it's sort of this weird cycle, but, so yeah, it doesn't put you in the headlines, right? It's technical, right? It's complicated. If you weren't coming in as a water engineer, there's a lot to learn. And again, our focus is divided all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it really takes a concerted effort to do. And then, you know, not that this sounds bad, but I mean, you don't get a lot of credit for it, right? I mean, I'll go and talk with the panels of legislators and they'll introduce us and they'll say, this person's special is mental health, this person is child welfare, this one is, you know, and Jenny does a lot of water. And I'll sit there for 2 hours and no one will ask me a question. Fine with me, but, you know, so that suits me fine, I think, but I think that's why maybe. And then it is pretty complicated. So, I guess. I mean, more water engineers need to run for political office, but engineers aren't usually the extrovert politician. Right? But you can think about it.
Questions. For those of you that aren't the registered students, if you put your question in the chat box, I'll then have you ask Representative Arndt your questions after we get through the students. We have two more. So, Johanna, how about you? What would you like to hear from Representative Arndt?
So I kind of have a three-part question. I'm really interested in kind of what you see as the future in water in Colorado. And so first part is kind of what you think about or what your thoughts are about the reservoir that's going to be proposed to be built north of town. And then where you see Colorado going in terms of water use within the next 5 years. And then the third part, which I guess you've somewhat answered, is whether it's become easier over the years to pass water laws, considering that droughts have become more prominent in Colorado and kind of more people are realizing that that's like a thing that's kind of more on their mind than it has been in the past.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the NISP, the Northern Integrated Supply Project, is what you're referring to there. And there's two dams, and one of them would be the Glade Reservoir up north of town. And that's kind of what I was talking about when alluding to when I was saying, you know, that's been 20 years in the works. I think in the intervening 20 years, we have gotten a lot better at technology. We've gotten our hydrology has changed too, right? With the climate. And with all due respect to Northern Water, who are really provide great water providers who provide a lot of fresh, clean water for a huge area. I think that there could be another way to secure that water in a way that wouldn't be such an environmentally damaging proposition. So plugging up a hogback, moving a highway, you know, pumping the water uphill, right? It is a big project. When Two Forks Dam was denied down in Denver, Denver Water had to stop and really rethink the way they ran their water, right? So I'm not being critical of their vision from 20 years ago, but here we are today. And possibly, you know, I try to think of water storage as really the retiming of water. And we retime water a lot of ways, right? And we do it through storage in a bucket and do it in a little tiny rain barrel, which doesn't really, you know, impact the big picture. But you can also do it through water reuse. You can do it through the WISE project. There's lots of innovative ways out there. And then now we have aquifer storage too. So I think that Tom Sale is a professor at CSU who I talk to a lot. And he's been very thoughtful about trying to get some sort of a arbitration going, because there will be lawsuit upon lawsuit upon lawsuit about that. And in my view, I'd rather have my either tax money or my my water rates, right, go to government and my water than going to the courts where we slug it out, right? That doesn't seem very productive to me. He's advocating for some sort of an arbitration on that. So this is going to be a lot longer discussion on that, but I'm really hoping we can think of a solution that meets the future water needs of Colorado without the environmental damage that may do, or that will do. So that's one. Water use. Oh gosh, you know, I think a lot about this. Someone's like, well, why do we still have lawns? I'll go, fact of the matter is we still have the water, right? Fort Collins is going to go under water restriction October 1, right? But why aren't we under water restriction all year long? That's what I asked the city. I'm like, why not? Just put us under water restriction all the time. I said, well, we don't really need to, right? So the fact of the matter is right now we have enough water. So if humans are interesting, and this is where politics and policy is fascinating to me as well. What do humans do, right? And how do we act, and when do we act, right? That little land use bill fell twice and then finally passed. And it just said the county has to consider water when you're developing a master plan. That just seems like such a no-brainer to me. I don't even know why it has to be a law. But that was a big deal, right? Kind of. I mean, the next thing that'll be coming, if we need to, is that you have to do it and you have to tell us where the water's coming, and you can't plan this without that, right? So things will get tighter and tighter as the water gets more scarce, as the droughts keep coming. I don't think the definition of a drought is compared to some sort of past, right? I think we're under a new aridification of the West. And I know Jennifer probably knows way more about this than I do, but I start talking about it like that. Like, let's get this out of our mind. This is a short year, 2 year drought. This is the new normal. This is aridification. And how are we going to do it? So the Colorado River Compact is coming up to be renegotiated, and that's federal. So that wouldn't be at the state legislature level. And the drought contingency plans have been developed by each state. So you're right to ask that question. And there's a very meaty research and policy making coming up along those lines. Yeah. I mean, right now they're calling the drought contingency plans what, voluntary, compensated, and temporary. Well, if we get enough water short, that won't be voluntary. They won't be temporary, and it may not be compensated. We'll have to use less water. We'll have to conserve more. And some farmland will need to either be converted or go to crops that are less thirsty. And, you know, you have to say goodbye to your lawn first. You know, we're going to have to do a lot of things. Have you ever been to Tucson? You don't have a lawn in Tucson, right? Now, if we get rid of the lawns on the Front Range, that's not going to solve the problem either, but it's going to be all of the above strategy, in my view. My little pea brain.
Just a reminder to the class that we're going to have Brad Udall here next month in a few weeks, and he is going to be talking about the new normal and the climate change projections. So.
I will tell you, if you ask about partisan things, you know, Brad came and talked to the water committee last year, and we did have someone on the water committee say, the climate's not changing. You know, after Brad did his whole presentation, and he was like, just had a totally straight face, like, I went up to him afterwards, does that bother you? He goes, no, I hear that. Yeah. And he comes from a political family that he's not a stranger to. That's pure politics.
Yes, that is. Very thoughtful questions again. Rhythm, do you have any questions for Representative Barton?
Yes, so first of all, I wanted to congratulate you on winning the President's Award for Water Reuse Association. You recently won the President's Award, right?
Yes.
So yeah, my question was asked on a chat. So like, in recent times, like when I visited a few companies and I've been working with USDA recently, and I've heard a term that they use for like recently what municipalities are doing in order to compensate the more usage of water. They are buying the rights from the agricultural farmers and they are drying up the farming lands. So do you have any policies that are coming up against that or like helping farmers? Because like there are very few farmers who are like right now doing farming or left to farm. So they are also selling their old water rights to the municipalities at higher rates in order to give them more water and dry up their lands. So like, do you have any rights or like policies coming in recent times for that?
Thanks for the question. Yes, that was a very unexpected honor. When I got that email, I honestly thought it was like a hoax. I was like, oh, you know how you delete your emails? And you're like, congratulations, you won. I'm like, bah. And I was like, so that was quite an honor. I don't think I deserved it. The other guy from the EPA was amazing. I was like, wow. So the idea is through the Ag Water Protection Act to allow farmers to realize the value on their water, like Airbnb, without selling it, right? So that's the idea behind that water right. But we need to keep going. And it's the same with some of the water tweaking the abandonment statute and those things like that. So they could lend, lease, or trade or conserve that water somehow without feeling like they're going to lose, have it be subject to abandonment. I think those are the flexible moving of water around the state to get, as I'm not the only one who says this, to get water where we want it, when we want it, is really important. And maybe not always to the highest bidder, because water is a public good, right? But I like some of the municipalities, like Fort Collins. In my view, of course, I'm biased. I think Fort Collins Utilities does a wonderful job. And Teresa Connor, she used to work at CSU, didn't she? She's set of interim head of them there now. The tiered rate pricing, right? Because that really helps. Things like that. Yeah. But I think you're right on. Yeah. We have to keep working on that. Now, do we also need to work on some efficiencies, water efficiencies in the ag country? Yeah. Or ag world. Mm-hmm. I tried to do the water reuse for livestock washing because that's a formal use of water. And do you guys know John Stolpe? I love him, but he's a giant in the world of water. And he came up to me and he says, Art, don't do that. Yes, sir. And he used to be commissioner of ag, and then he was John Hickenlooper's special water advisor. And he just said, don't, just leave it alone. I said, okay. You know, I take his advice. But I was thinking for National Western, it'd be really cool to have the purple pipe, right? And just have like the most forward, like Western water, you know, because CSU is going to have a big water thing down there. But if Stolpe says, Aren't, don't do that, I don't know.
He's a very credible person. So.
He is. And he'd had a lot of meetings about that. He really heard loud and clear that, you know. So yes, you're on the right track with that if you can solve that problem.
So I have another question for you. So like I was recently, before this project, I was working with the Air Force and they were like working on water resiliency, like for against sea level rise and stormwater surge. So they had like looked at the resiliency planning and like the water shortages too for a longer period of time, and they were like very thorough with it. But like looking at the Colorado situation, I've been living in Colorado, like in Fort Collins, for past three and a half years, and I've seen that every year, but towards the end of the season, like towards the end of the summer, we are facing water shortages. Like, do you think that we need better resiliency planning for Colorado water, or like, is there any way, is there any way or something has been brought up to the government for like bringing up the, for making up better plans for resiliency?
Oh, better planning. That's a good question. Well, you know, the state engineers really does that. And then with the prior appropriation doctrine, you know, if there's a call in the river, we deliver water to those water rights and fill them. Fulfill the water rights, right? You know how that works. And if sometimes the juniors are short, they're just short. So we don't, that's how we distribute water. I think in terms of when you say better planning, I think some people might respond with more storage. If you want to talk about it that way, I think the planning kind of comes in the, like what I was talking about is like all of the above strategy. Right. So that we have it where we want it when we want it. We also have to deliver, what is it, Jennifer, 2/3 of our water out of state through our various compacts. So the planning is really taken care of through the prior appropriation and water rights distribution system.
The former, a very former state engineer who was at the time, state engineers were called water czars, said that the Colorado water plan was the prior appropriation doctrine. And of course now Hickenlooper came in and did a little more conscientious work about where we're headed. So that's always interesting. So that's, I'm getting a lot of questions on chat, and some of them you might have already answered, but Rio, are you on, and do you want to ask your question about land use planning for water?
Sure. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Senator Byron. So good to see you.
Who is it?
It's Rio.
Rio? What are you doing?
Waiting for it to ring. sorry, my internet is so slow. I'm not using the video or else it just totally goes sideways. But yeah, I asked a question about, you know, you said it was a baby step on the land use planning and, you know, asking them, what do you see? I mean, the population is supposed to grow so much. What, where do you see the next baby step, or, you know, a few baby steps down the road in terms of land use planning and water? Because that's something I think could actually, in a rural community like ours in the San Luis Valley, water might be the hook for our leadership to think about land use planning in a different way. So I'm hoping that to bring that forward. But what do you see from the legislative standpoint? Thank you.
Oh, sure. So I didn't know, there's so many things I didn't know when I became a legislator. I'm still learning, but the state regulates the counties, except for a couple home rule counties that we have. And, you know, as you know, Rio, Colorado is not a state that appreciates the mandate. And that goes for Fort Collins too. We're home rule city. We don't really like the state telling us what to do either. But I mean, you could make that bill a lot stronger and say that you must, and then you could set some targets in there if you wanted to. You get a pretty big backlash from CCI, Colorado Counties Incorporated. But just like I was saying with the drought contingency plans, you know, it's voluntary until it's kind of not, right? We will hunker down, right? If and when we need to. And we usually, humans like to wait till the last hot second to do that. But we will. I mean, we still have some, like, you ran a bill to say that it used to be the HOAs, homeowners associations, wouldn't allow someone to not have lawn. They wouldn't allow zero scaping. So we had to do a law to say that yes, you can. So, I mean, when I think of like how far that is from actual meaningful quantity of water, and the little and the effort that goes into just making a bill like that pass, I'm like, you know, we're doing what we can, but it, you know, the saying, never waste a good drought, right? It's motivating. And I think some things will be coming down harder, right, as we go. And then so it's not always from the state, though. That's my other point. You know, the counties can do it, the cities can do it. Our cities never approved the gray water statute that Randy ran. And I asked them why, and they said because they think it constitutes reuse and indoor. And I was like, well, okay. Then why don't we make a bill that say it doesn't? Because, you know, I think we need more gray water. I think we need more water reuse, those things. So I'm going to do the gray water bill.
Great. There's a saying you'll probably appreciate from Buckminster Fuller, emergence by emergency.
Exactly.
Probably where we're headed. Thank you.
Or in other words, never waste a good crisis. We're getting lots of questions coming in here, Jenny, so hang on. Fatima, I'm not sure I'm saying your name right. Do you want to ask your question? You're on mute. Okay, let me ask the question for you. Are there any policies to restrict farmers from selling water to municipalities and drying up their irrigated lands?
No. It's a private property right. We don't restrict them from selling.
But there's a concern about drying up agriculture that I'm sure you've had lots of conversations about. Do you see any kind of policies or laws working towards making sure we don't just dry up all of ag?
Sure. I mean, one of the major thrusts of a lot of bills I've done or tried to do is make sure that, you know, a farmer, he or she will sell their water right when that's sometimes the most valuable thing to have, right? So they don't usually want to do that. And but why not let them realize the value of that asset without selling it? And I usually make the analogy of the Airbnb. You don't sell your house, you rent it out for a couple weeks. I think that's a good, more flexible way. And then,
some serious, important baby steps with respect to that aspect of it.
Right.
Julie, do you want to ask your question? Kallenberger?
Hi, Jenny. I just wanted to thank you for being here today with us. And also, what are your plans for the upcoming session? What kind of bills do you plan to tackle? And anything specific? Thanks.
Oh, sure. I always have my list of bills in the back of my notebook. So I think I will work with the City of Fort Collins on that gray water statute, clarifying that indoor gray water plumbing does not constitute reuse. So I think they're careful because CBT shares, Colorado Big Thompson shares, have a single use provision, right? So we want to be careful about that. I'll probably go back and talk to Andy Jones about the mutual ditch issue and see where that is. That's a very interesting issue. Have some more meetings about the abandonment statute and see if we can get that right. Something like that, something along those lines. There's something in there. John McLeod is working with us and some TNC and that fishing guys group, I forget. let's see. Those are sort of the water things. I'm working, and I had another meeting with CDPHE today about, that's the Colorado Department of Health and Environment, about a dredge and fill concern bill they had, which has to do with the Waters of the United States ruling. So I don't know if there'll be legislation on that or, that's the other thing as a state representative, you do legislation, that's the part people usually see, but they don't see all the other sort of things. So I'm the rising chair of the Council of State Governments West, which is our professional association. And so we're starting to have a pre-conference before our conference on the Colorado River. So we are a consortium of legislators from 13 Western states. And that was my idea. I said, this is something that pertains to 8 of the 13 states. Why don't we have a forum where we, and so we did it online this year, and Justice Hobbs was there and some other people, which was great, to educate legislators about water, because, so if you ask me what I'm doing in the world of water, I'm doing some of those bills and I'm doing that. And then, stuff like that.
So as a legislator, you're not just trying to get bills through, but isn't a lot of your job mediation and facilitation of conversations?
Oh, yeah. And answering the phone and everything. I got a call today as some long-term care facilities closing to, the wide range of issues. Yeah. But when I can carve out time, I work on water.
Sam, you have an interesting question. Are you still on? Do you want to ask your question?
I am, and I would thank you. And thank you, Jenny, for your care for Colorado on issues of water. I'm particularly concerned about the loss of economic status for my area of the state, in particular the southeast portion, the lower Arkansas Valley, and what has happened there with transfers of water from ag to municipal use. And I think you may have addressed this, and if you want to say anything more about it, that's fine. But I guess my follow-up question is there any way, do you support the Arkansas Valley Conduit as a way of restoring quality drinking water to that part of the state, as a way of reducing the economic inequality that seems to be happening there? I mean, the lower Ark Valley is very depressed now, and the upper Front Range is blowing up, and it seems like it's all out of balance, and water could be a solution, I think.
Oh, thank you. I've been to the lower Ark a lot, and I work with Jay Winter on a lot of things. Out of that crisis, I would call it, or whatever, that hardship that happened, I think a lot of really creative water ideas have come, and you have a really great team down there to work with. I know what that conduit is, but I guess I don't know everything about it, but I think it's been in the works for years and years. I wish I knew more. Isn't it federal?
It is. And, that's obviously where most of the money needs to come from. I think they're looking for some more creative ways to finance it, but it's part of the Fry Arc project.
Okay. Yeah. So and that's coming down there. That was our first water tour this summer, which of course was canceled. So invite me back. I'll go anytime.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sam, I hear an invitation to invite her on her own personal tour. So
you might. Oh, I just drive down there and bust all by myself. Fine.
Well, I will put a bug in a few ears down here, but yeah, that would be great.
Great.
Another question is about from Joe Burke. And Joe, you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to. So when appropriating water rights, beneficial seems pretty subjective. How do the water courts in Colorado determine if an individual or an entity, if their use is beneficial?
Thanks, Joe. Yeah. Now, I wish I had the help of a water lawyer, or Jennifer knows more about this than I do.
Well, you define it by law.
And we have expanded the uses under the term beneficial through legislation.
Okay. And then have you guys gotten any negative feedback from communities when they're denied their appropriations? And then how do you deal with that if they are?
Well, they're denied appropriations based on the careful system that we have and that people accept, right? So if someone, junior water rights holder, doesn't get their water, no, right? I'm sure they're not happy about it, but that's our water rights system. But expanding the use of the term beneficial is very controversial, right? So we have the RISID, which is the recreational in-stream channel diversions. That is very controversial. Somebody tried to file a case in court that the Bubbling Creek, they had an auditory, was a beneficial use. You can think of that because, of course, it's beautiful to hear a babbling brook. But, I mean, how do you quantify that for that person in terms of maintaining that water right as beneficial if you file a water right for an auditory purpose? I don't know. That's challenging.
In the beginning, beneficial use had to be, you had to divert the water out of the river.
Right.
And then we changed that law in the 70s and allowed in-stream flows, but the catch was only the state could own those in-stream flows. And then we had the RICDs, is that what they're called?
RISIDs
that Jenny talked about, which allows kayak courses that can go through town, but you have to do something to the course. You have to do something to the river to make it an in-channel diversion. Snowmaking now is considered beneficial use. So there's a progressive history of how we've loosened up on the term beneficial use. Jenny, you have done a marvelous job of giving me a segue into my future classes, and that is we're going to be talking with Greg and environmentalists about how they deal with Ducks Unlimited and American Whitewater, about how they deal with recreational issues. I talked about Brad Udall. We're going to be talking with CDPHE.
Oh, good.
Yes, Nicole Rowan will be joining us.
Good.
So you probably
this is interesting because they oppose a lot of my water bills.
So we'll be having Jim Lockhead here from Denver Water also. And wow. So those of you that have these questions about urban and environment and actually urban conservation, I think would be helpful.
Right.
I think we got to all the questions and we kept you over a little bit, but okay. I just can't thank you enough for joining us.
Can I just say one more thing?
Please.
I invite absolutely every single person on the call, whether you're a student or listening in as a non-student, to come to the Capitol at any time, and you can shadow me or write to me. I'm very accessible. You can find my contact on the web. Just email me and you come down to the Capitol and we'll get you there on a day we're doing a water bill, and you can come with me to Water Congress and listen in, and you can see how it goes. And that's an honest and very, and I do it all the time. So please come.
So Jenny, the students have to write a paper about a water issue and kind of the law and policy and politics around that issue. You may get a couple of them knocking on your door for some ideas.
Well, I told you where I live, and you can call me, or you can email me, or you can just come by.
Right. Thank you so much. Next week, we're going to talk about federal water issues. So Clean Water Act, NEPA, Corps of Engineers. So that we'll talk about some of the institutions, Bureau of Reclamation, et cetera. So be happy to have you join us next week. The guest lecture is me. And we'll have a good time. Thank you all so much for your attention. Jenny, thanks again.
Thank you.